ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into combat sports, brought to you by the WBO, the World Boxing Organization.
Pedro, let me say congratulations on your long time in radio, you and your team, and for your ratings, man. I was reading about that. I'm very impressed with you, Pedro.
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
I don't want to predict this fight, but, you know, I'm going to promise that I can give a good fight, you know, to make people happy, and I just do my best.
Pedro Fernandez.
If I can't teach you one way, I'll teach you another, but I'm going to get the job done.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen. Emanating, coming at you from the multi-million dollar Sports Byline Studios, live on Twitch.tv. Check it, the Sports Byline USA channel. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. 36 plus years now of knocking out all bums, often imitated but never duplicated, straight up. My name is Pedro Fernandez. Welcome to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. In this first hour of a two-hour show, of course, this is the Sunday edition, live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio, Channel 211, and a plethora of other internet platforms. Straight up, hour number one, our guests will include Muhammad Ali Jr. That's right, the kid of the greatest. He'll be here. We'll also hear from the retired HBO godfather, that's right, the icon, Mr. Larry Merchant. So straight up, we've got an exciting first hour. But wait, I'm not done. Hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide, of course, will feature Sarah McCaskill. Who's that? Well, she beat up on Cecilia Brakes last night, and she may have revolutionized women's boxing. Why do I say that? She's exciting to watch, and she won a fight last night, and when she was a 35-1 underdog. Straight up, big upset winner. We'll hear from her, and also we'll hear from the UFC heavyweight champion still, Stipe Miocic. Of course, a former Golden Glove champion who turned boxing into UFC greatness. Straight up, we'll hear from him. Of course, a winner last night, a 5-round winner over former champion, stick a fork in him, Daniel Cormier. So we've got lots to talk about. Open phone lines all around the planet. 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. There's also the guilt-free, no-commitment text line. Text us here in the studio. 1-415-275-1613. That's 1-415-275-1613. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Often imitated, but never duplicated.
Decision now. Let's listen.
Clarity in the world of professional boxing is spelled WBO. That's right, the World Boxing Organization is boxing's only transparent sanctioned body. You can follow the WBO on Facebook or check out their website, WBOboxing.com. That's WBOboxing.com. The World Boxing Organization.
Joe's gonna come out smoking, and I ain't gonna be joking. I'll be pecking and a poking, pouring water on his smoking. Then this might shock and amaze you, but I will destroy Joe Frazier.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Hello, Joe!
You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking at the world of boxing and MMA. We take it from San Francisco, I think, to the East Coast in Florida and bring in a man whose name is, what can I say, one of a kind, Muhammad Ali Jr. A very good afternoon to you, sir.
Thank you for having me on your show.
Pardon me, sir?
Thank you for having me on your show.
No, this is a pleasure without a doubt. I mean, there had to be a lot of stress growing up being Muhammad Ali's kid. In fact, I understand you get arrested at the airport all the time. What's going on with that?
I was detained at Fort Lauderdale Airport coming back from Jamaica with my mother. It was the travel ban, Muslim travel ban that was on. And they detained me for about an hour and 45 minutes.
Wow. I've been detained a couple of times, so I know what it's like to be in detention. It's no fun, especially more than once. Now, I asked Larry Holmes as a kid one time. He and I were sitting together watching Larry fight. I said, what's it like to watch your father fight? And he said it was, quote, stressful. I mean, can you expand on that?
Well, me watching my father fight wasn't stressful. Actually, I liked seeing him fight. I mean, I like the thought of just seeing him, period. I mean, because I didn't see him that much. So seeing him on TV was like heaven to me.
Mm-hmm. You know, I spent some time with him. I was his personal security guard, a bodyguard per se, for a tour through China after I bought him a hamburger a year before on a tour through China, and he remembered that, and him and Harold Smith got together, and they paid me a lot of money to go to China with him, and we stayed first class everywhere we went. He treated me like gold, and I still got the picture he signed for me, Love Muhammad Ali. And Junior, I look all over the web, and I can't find another picture he ever signed, Love Muhammad Ali. So I felt sort of special there.
Well, he usually take care of people that take care of him. That's his motto. Because, you know, he always look at, well, but God, I think, if I treat him not like I want to be treated, then God won't bless me.
Well,
I want God to bless me.
Well, when we went out for public appearances, I made sure, if his tie was crooked, I made sure that was perfect. You know what I'm saying? I mean, we had a great time together, and we got to spend some time together afterwards in Spain. And so, I mean, there's a few different spots around the world. And, of course, in Las Vegas, I've got to spend some time with your father. And it was a truly, it was a life-changing experience. I guess anybody that's been touched by him sort of feels a little bit differently because, you know, I'll tell you a little story. We're driving through China on a train. We've got our own train. That's how cool we are. We've got our own train. We got our engine. We got the little passenger car. And then we got the little bathroom car behind the passenger car. So that's the whole train. And we're going from Shanghai. No, we're going from Guangzhou to Shanghai. So we're about an hour and a half, 2 hours into this 3-4 hour train ride. And he says, stop the train, stop the train. I said, what do you mean you want to stop the train? He said, just stop the train. Let's see somebody. This is boring. Let's see somebody. I said, oh, man. I said, oh. So I went up there and told the captain of the train that we wanted to stop the train. Well, he thought I was going to try to thought I was hijacking the train or something like that because there was a language barrier in the whole 9 yards. So finally, I convinced him to stop the train. So we stopped the train in this town, and there was no electricity going into the town. And maybe there was one wire, but people were still going to the bathroom at outhouses and all that kind of good stuff. So we stopped the train, and about 7 or 8 minutes, we had about 300 or 400 people around the train, and they all knew who he was, and nobody had ever read the newspaper. I mean, these people aren't, you know what I'm saying? They had never seen a newspaper before, but they knew who your father was, and I thought that was, like, mind-blowing.
Yeah. Well, when it comes to great people, road travels, you don't have to be in the newspaper for the road to travel. People talk. And then people listen. So, road travel first, and people are talking about it.
Well, there's no doubt about that, but people, I didn't think these people had ever been exposed to him. That's what I'm trying to say. They had never seen a newspaper before, but yet they knew who he, there's no radios there. I mean, I looked around and they had no teeth. You know, because they were like Chinese cavemen. I kid you not. They were like Chinese cavemen, and they knew who your father was, and he touched him. I remember there's one lady, she fainted. You know, I had a couple women faint with your father. One fainted in Macau, and then one fainted when we stopped the train. She just couldn't believe her eyes. It was just like, bang, and she just hit the ground.
Well, my father, he catered to a lot of people and loved by a lot of people. I mean, my father was very humble, so a lot of people just gravitated towards him because of his character. And yeah, the road travels when you treat people right, word travels fast. But when you treat people like they don't talk about you, they don't even want to recognize you, they don't want to even acknowledge you. But if you really do good for people, they're gonna talk, everybody's gonna talk, they're gonna get around, and then you're gonna have people that wanna see you.
Good point. We're talking with Muhammad Ali Jr., the son of Muhammad Ali, of course, the greatest, born Cassius Clay back in 1942, the Olympic gold medal in 1960. I remember he came on the Jack Parr show, and Jack Parr and him had such a good time, and George Carlin. We've played all those clips over the years, of course. Nothing, no personality quite like Muhammad Ali. Was it stressful to watch him fight? I mean, win or lose, was it stressful? My mother said it was stressful as hell for her to watch me fight. She couldn't do it. She used to go out and smoke cigarettes outside in the lobby.
Like I said before, me looking at my father on TV, I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't see my father that often.
Okay.
So I enjoyed watching my father on TV. It felt like he was there right there with me. You know what I'm saying? You know, because I was raised by my grandparents, my mother's mother and father. So
mm-hmm.
I really didn't see him that much. But when I did see him, it was like a vacation, a celebration.
Hmm. So tell me about your mother. Born Belinda Boyd, Khalilah Ali. What is she doing these days? I think I was reading somewhere that she was on the cover of Ebony magazine seven times. Beautiful lady.
Yeah, my mother. See, she was she did her stuff. She didn't let my father know, so she took classes in martial arts without him knowing. She would sneak out the house and go to martial art classes, and her classmate was Bruce Lee. They had the same situation. My mother became the ninth Dan black belt.
Yeah, I was reading that, so I was figuring maybe Ali didn't want to mess around with her. Anyway, Junior, can you, Mr. Go on.
Let me tell you a funny story about that. My father came inside the house. My mother didn't know about it, but he peeked inside the house and put his hand on her shoulder. Well, being that you have... a reaction from just, you know, just, what do you call it? It's a sudden reaction to somebody touching her, and she didn't know it was anybody in the house. So she flipped him, but not intentionally. It's just a reaction towards her being surprised. So she flipped him, and then... He got mad. He was like, the woman crazy. She don't know who I am. What's wrong with the woman? And then he had to think about it, like, wait a minute, how'd she do that?
Are you trying to tell me right here that your mother holds a KO win over your father?
Yeah, man. I asked my father one time, I was like, Daddy, I know you had a whole lot of professional fights in your life. What is the one fight you ever had that you'll never fight again? He was thinking for a minute, and a light bulb popped up into his head. He said, "Only one thing now, that's right here."
Yeah. Good enough. Muhammad Ali Jr. live on Sports Bylines.
I think boxing is dangerous. Any man being hit in the head, the brain's a delicate thing. I think it should be well protected. If a fellow's not qualified, he shouldn't be allowed to fight. But football is proven to have more deaths. Baseball, ice hockey, horse racing, car racing is much more dangerous. But I would advise nobody to box if they get hit too much and it's too dangerous.
Now, more Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
From the greatest to the son of the greatest, Muhammad Ali Jr. on the line from Florida. Mr. Ali, I got to ask you, do people laugh at you and chuckle when you say, hey, my name's Muhammad Ali? Yeah, right. Do they say that?
No, not really. Some people say that, you ain't Muhammad Ali, sir. I don't believe it. So I'd be like, well, Google my name.
Yeah, Google
Muhammad
my name.
Muhammad Ali Jr. They get on their phone, they Google my name, and this is you. I said,
Mama, don't lie, I thought it was my daughter. Tell me, so what are your current projects right now? What are you doing?
Hold on 1 second.
This isn't the perfect time to be. Hold on 1 second during a live interview. You shouldn't have another phone going. But I guess that's what live radio is all about, baby. You are tuned to the Sports Byline Broadcast Network, live all across America, Canada, Puerto Rico, of course, the Virgin Islands. And now we are live in 183 countries on the fabulous Internet. And, yes, this was the first boxing combat sports show on the Internet. Are we ready to let him go? Is that it? Man? Mr.
Sorry,
Ali, you there? Are you there?
I'm here.
Hello, are you there?
I'm here.
All right. real quick, what are your current projects right now?
So right now, I'm going from state to state, setting up gyms for Stop Bullying, because the kids that are bullied, and they get the bug, and they either kill themselves, or they shoot up a school.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what we need in this world today. We need the schools to teach the truth about history, and things that we need to survive in this world today.
Okay. You know,
like a trade or whatever.
Yeah. Listen.
That's about it, reading, stuff like that.
Okay. Here's what's up. I'm going to explain something to you real quick. You have a magnificent voice. Coming over a cell phone across the country, it doesn't sound that good. So what I'm trying to tell you is next time we need to do this, we need to do this on Skype, man. So we can just have your voice out there sounding absolutely pristine and perfect. Seriously, because you are the man. We want to let you talk and let you be absolutely clear. But the cell phone keeps breaking up on me here, so that's where we're having some problems. So this anti-bullying thing, are you on the tour right now going from state to state?
Yes, sir. We get gyms from each state. We're going to name them after my father. And I'll implement this program that we have in Stop Bullying. We get the children in these gyms and teach them how to defend themselves.
Okay. Good enough.
And give them some confidence back.
Mr. Ali?
Because when the kids are bullied, they fall back on their education. If they stressed out and they're depressed, and they don't get good grades. They don't focus on their grades and their books and their studies.
You know how I dealt with bullies? I took care of them. Bottom line is, Mr. Ali, we thank you so much for your time. We hope to have you back real soon. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into the world of boxing and MMA. Aaron, I told you that wasn't together. You are tuned to the Sports Byline Broadcast Network all across America, Canada, Puerto Rico, and of course, around the world, 183 countries on the fabulous internet. Boxing last night, of course, live on Showtime. Not great fights. Of course, David Benavidez, the WBC super middleweight champion at one point in time, took care of Mr. Roman Angulo. Of course, stopped him, I think, about the seventh or the ninth round. It was a one-sided fight. Martinez came in 3.5 pounds overweight. Thus, he lost the belt on the scale. I guess the WBC will figure something out to put him in a bout for the vacant title now against some upcoming challenger. But the bottom line is the kid's got all kinds of ability. He just got the wrong attitude. He's got a cocaine problem as recently as a few months ago. He doesn't make weight in a big, big fight. I mean, how can you not? Listen, there's no excuse for not making weight. There's absolutely no excuse for not making weight. None whatsoever. None whatsoever. I can't believe that Aaron Snow would try to call me when I'm on the air. You are absolutely tuned to the Ring Talk. I'm getting phone calls all over the place. He knows I'm on the air and he shoot me a phone call. I couldn't believe it. You are tuned to the, it's all going downhill today, folks. You are tuned to Ring Talk from the Sports Byline Studios in San Francisco, California, of course. Last night, as I said, a couple of fights on the bill. Mr. Benavidez not making weight, but dominating his opponent, remaining unbeaten. Now, of course, a good fighter, no doubt. Maybe even a guy that, you know, could become a great fighter or a super fighter. But, you know, the attitude, if you haven't got the attitude and you can't get those last 3.5 pounds off, I was dry as a bone, couldn't get the last 3.5 pounds off, that's on you. Because I was always told, and that you got the weight off before you went to bed the night before. You didn't wake up the morning of the weigh-in, or you didn't go to the weigh-in knowing you were overweight. You went to the weigh-in knowing exactly what you weighed to the ounce. Okay, you knew to the ounce what you weighed when you went to the weigh-in. I mean, that's just the way it's done. You never showed up the weigh-in like Wilfredo Gomez against Salvador Sanchez in 1982 when he showed up at 130 pounds after his people put him to bed at 125 and three quarters. They put him to bed at 125 and three quarters. The weight limit was 126 pounds for the Salvador Sanchez fight, and Gomez comes down that morning. The next morning, he steps on the scale at 130 pounds. He never made 126. but he stepped in the scale at 130 pounds. Never, ever made 126. So that was a bit of a shocker. But outside of that, you got to lose that weight the night before, the day before. You don't lose it the day of the fight. Guys running around before the weigh-in, that kind of good stuff. That's what he tried to say. He was in the sauna before the weigh-in, and he couldn't get off the last 3.5 pounds. Well, son, you didn't try hard enough. That's all there was to it. And somebody gave you an out, because if they didn't give you an out, you would have made the weight. You know what I'm saying? Oh, man, don't worry about it. We'll take the WBC title away from you, and then we'll give you a vacant title shot against some schmo in the future. Because that's where we're going to work this out for you. Don't worry about it. We'll take care of you. And I think that's what they're going to do for this guy. And I don't know if I make the exceptions for this young man, because I don't know if he's really all that exceptional. I really don't. I mean, he had a good, solid night. There's no doubt about that. But 23-0 with 20 KOs. Still young, but got that cocaine, bro. I'm not a cocaine. I mean, listen, I got problems with Colombian dust because I've seen what it's done to my friends, my family, my relatives, and people that aren't my friends too, enemies as well. It's never, it never ends up good. It just never ends up good. Speaking of never ending up good, there was a WBA, the World of Bunko and Anarchy, of course, that's what I call them, the sanctioning body out of down there, Panama, Venezuela, about South America. Anyway, this guy named Raleigh Romero. Remember the name. Raleigh Romero, because he will end up in the Boxing Hall of Fame, maybe of his hometown. But that's it. He ain't never going nowhere. But now he's a co-called WBA interim 135-pound champion, 12 and zip, 10 KOs, Raleigh Romero. Rolando Raleigh Romero. He couldn't lick a stamp if you wet his tongue. He should be arrested for impersonating a professional fighter. And what's even worse is that the three judges last night that scored this fight 7-5 in rounds, 8-4 in rounds, and then one judge scored a 118-110. I mean, what was he thinking? So, I mean, holy cow, that's 10-2 in rounds. 10-2 in rounds. And I gotta tell you, Jackson Martinez or Marinez, whatever, the bottom line is, he came to fight. I mean, he really came to fight, and he looked good. He had nice counters, nice moves. I thought he rocked Raleigh a couple of times, so Raleigh was rocking. I looked at the internet post-fight, and of course, Ryan Garcia weighed in and said it was a robbery. Gervonta Davis said, WTF. The entire, Devin Haney was on that. In other words, they all thought it was a bit of a ripoff, a big time ripoff. And of course, this Romero guy, he saw no shame in it, but at the end of the day, I thought it was an outrage. I mean, I thought it was an outrage. I had it 118, 111 the other way. 118, 111 the other way. 118, 111 the other way. In other words, holy cow. Talk about 10-2 in rounds. Maybe 10-1-1 the other way. In other words, it was a rout. I thought it was a rout for this young man, but he got stiffed. And I was the kid from the Dominican. And I tried to tell, Socrates Palmer, boxing's PhD, via text last night that he was probably doing just enough to lose. He was probably doing just enough to lose. And the writing was on the wall. This guy was fighting out of Las Vegas. He kept saying that. And this Romero guy kept throwing haymakers all night. He was throwing punches like a bad amateur. Like a bad female amateur. Like a girl that, you know, just put some gloves on, man. Or some hillbilly. I'm serious. It was absolutely inept boxing. I couldn't believe it. As I said, he couldn't lick a stamp if he wet his tongue. And now he's the WBA 135-pound champion. And WBA Gilberto Mendoza said, I just spoke with both teams, and they're going to do the possibility of a rematch right away. In other words, even the WBA knows it's a ripoff. But the bottom line is, it shouldn't be the WBA stepping in here. It should be the Athletic Commission. I mean, those three judges, I will get the names for them after the break and a little bit later in the show, but those three judges should be arrested for impersonating professional boxing judges. There's no other way to put it. And if you can't tell me, and if you're not telling me they're corrupt, they're inept. It's one or the other. There's no in between here. Either you're corrupt or you're inept. It's one or the other. So which is it with these three judges with the Nevada State Athletic Commission? And we've had bad judging in Nevada before. I can think of my buddy Dalby Shirley, still 88 years old, still kicking. He had some bad scores over the years. Of course, that first Hagler Anna Firmo fight was the only fight that he ever admitted to that was a bad score. That's what Dalby told me. I'll admit to the first Anna Firmo Hagler score, because I think that was a draw. But outside of that, Dalby wouldn't take any heat for any of the bad decisions he made over the years. Bad decisions? Man, that fight last night stunk up the internet. What can I say? You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. First time was a great time. Second time was a blast. Third time.
my thing.
Go ahead.
I want to get into it, man, you know. Like a sex machine, man. Moving, doing it, you know. Can I count it off?
Go ahead.
One, two, three, four.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
We take it from the city by the bay to the city of angels and bring in, of course, the retired HBO godfather, Mr. Hall of Famer himself, Mr. Larry Merchant, who's more famous as being the husband of Patricia Stitch Merchant. How's the godmama today?
We're doing good.
Fantastic.
We're okay. What day is this?
It doesn't matter.
What month is this?
You know, godfather, during the pandemic, I sort of like days sort of slip away and some almost a week can slip away now because you're not doing nothing or whether you, what you're doing isn't like per the clock per se and you don't have a schedule like you used to have in the old days. So this is all, to use a word that might piss somebody off, this is all queer to me.
Well, in the middle of all this, I'm trying to write a little magazine article and it's like going back to the old days.
What's the article on?
It's on Manny Pacquiao and me. Manny and me.
Was the first time you met him in San Francisco?
No, we covered the Ledwaba fight, first fight, when he came to the U.S. Nobody knew about him here. He was like 20 years old, had already fought more than 30 fights, and he was a late substitute.
Right.
And, you know, after about 10 minutes, I was talking about this typhoon that had come across the Pacific Ocean. And we know the rest of the story. And, became one of the most exciting elite fighter on the planet.
Now, Marion Muhammad was as the promoter that get I'm not Mary Muhammad, I can't remember, but it was one of the Muhammads. Anyway, he was the promoter that got the credit for discovering him. But actually, what happened was attorney Sidney Hall out of Burlingame, California, was running this visa, this Filipino visa, and he was bringing girls over here, and not illegally. He was an attorney. He was bringing girls over here and having them be nannies and that kind of good stuff. So he's going back and forth to the Philippines, and he happens to go to the gym one day. They tell him, you need to go to the gym and take a look at this guy, and he walks in, and it's Manny Pacquiao. So he comes back, and he tells the Muhammad guy, I can't remember what his first name was, but he ends up telling him, and they come together, and that's how he ended up coming to the United States.
Well, when he came to the U.S., he somehow found Freddie Roach's gym.
Yeah.
Freddie Roach had never heard of him. He came into the gym, and Roach was doing some mitt work with fighters, and he asked Pacquiao if he wanted to do it, and he did. And Freddie Roach, after a few minutes, it was though a new sun had risen in the sky for him. He said this guy had so much speed and power, he had never seen anything like it, blah, blah, blah. And the story began. And how I was involved was in coming up with the idea for the fight with Oscar De La Hoya, and which seemed crazy at the time because Manny had been campaigning as a junior lightweight, and Oscar had gone all the way up to
middle,
junior middle at least, and it seemed more of a joke than a mismatch.
Yeah, well,
and we know the rest of the story.
Exactly. Although I give Manny Pacquiao tons of credit, and he beat Oscar really thoroughly that night, Oscar, I thought, pulled a Sugar Ray Leonard move, and he should have thought about this, because when Ray Leonard fought Hector Camacho, Camacho's people got Ray Leonard to weigh in the morning of the fight, and they made him come down to 160 pounds. Well, they didn't make Oscar weigh in the day of the fight, but they made him come down to 147 pounds, I think, which was an unnatural weight for him at that point in time, and I think the weight killed him. I'm not trying to say Oscar would have won that fight, but he would have performed a little bit better had he not been, head is. Because Godfather, losing weight kicks your... I can't explain. I just had a colonoscopy this week, so I lost a couple pounds. But I'm telling you, losing weight to make weight for a weight limit is excruciating, painful, emotionally. The whole is stressful.
Well, and I think that it's... as long as there have been weight divisions, I think people have tried to finesse it one way or another, and come in at their most effective weight. So there was an incentive to fight at a lower weight than your body held comfortably.
Mm-hmm.
And if you waited until the last couple of days or the last couple of minutes, maybe taking off some water weight would help you make it. And I could remember as a kid reading a lot about how this fighter had to go into the whatever you call it, that room or steam room, and try to lose weight and all of that stuff. There are more modern methods today. But, yeah, it's a factor, certainly.
You know, I was in, it was either Vegas or Reno. It was one of the Hiltons, Reno Hilton, Las Vegas Hilton. And Jorge Maromero Páez is going to fight Troy Deutsch or something like that. So I go to get my massage the day before the fight, and they were still weighing people in the morning of the fight. So, I go into the locker room down there at the health club, and all of a sudden, I hear this violent noise coming out of the sauna, and the sauna door bursts open, and they carry this guy out in a rubber suit. And I'm trying to figure, I'm not figuring out what's going on here. It's not working out. Two and two is not four. So anyway, they lay this guy out on the table, and it looked like he was in a body bag. And they unzip the body bag, and it's Maromero Páez. And he says to me, he recognizes me, he goes, homie, no mas box. In other words, they had him in there. They brought him from 150 pounds to 126 pounds in two days.
Oh, Jesus. Well, you know, it's part of the lore of boxing and the lure of boxing as well, I guess. How can I be most effective and make the most money and all the rest of that good and bad stuff.
Okay. Looks like 87-year-old Bob Arum struck it rich, I thought, as far as promotional gold is concerned. He's got Lomachenko, the once-beaten lightweight champion, taking on the up-and-comer. Of course, the kid from Brooklyn. I'm talking about Teofimo Lopez. This fight's going to happen for sure in October. And I don't think the fight's going to be on pay-per-view. It's going to be on ESPN or ESPN+. So Bob Arum's still hitting home runs, man. This year, I got him, like, he's batting well over 700.
Well, I don't keep track of his at-bats, but he's been active in trying to make some fights under these circumstances and so on, and where fighters have to take a cut, less money than they're used to making or dreamed of making. And he's convinced them it's better fighting for less than sitting home for longer. And hopefully we get some good fights on.
What is your current take on the boxing game right now? I mean, what's your perspective as we here are in August of 2020?
I think it's lost somewhere in the cloud. I don't follow it. I happen to turn on the Frampton fight from Great Britain yesterday afternoon, and I enjoyed a couple of rounds of it as he stopped a bigger and opponent. But I'm not into it now. How can anybody be into it now? Until the elite fighters start to collect some eyeballs.
Good point.
I don't think that's a good thing for boxing, but hey, the other games are having similar problems.
Now, you know I like to dog women's boxing because I think that, like women's basketball, the basketball's smaller. Like women's golf, the holes are shorter. Like women's baseball, the bats are smaller. But yet they put the same size gloves on women as they do men, which I think takes away from the sport. But anyway, last night, an unheralded 6-1 underdog, an American underdog, by the name of Jessica McCaskill. She came in at 8-2 with 3 KOs. She ended up beating that Cecilia Brekus girl, who was 36-1 with like 9 stops with a majority decision in 10 rounds. They built this temporary ring in outside Tulsa, Oklahoma with no fans. We couldn't have any, no fans out there. Not bad, but what can I say? This girl looks like she might be a bit of a Mexican-American girl. She looks like she might be a little bit of a star. Women's boxing needs some luster, Godfather. You want, men's boxing's maybe lacking, but women's boxing is like almost unwatchable.
Well, you can say this, that women's boxing along with regular boxing, there are opportunities for young fighters to get out there and show their stuff, and some of them may light a fire. So this is an opportunity, you might say, for many fighters who are below the elite status to make some steps toward that. But meanwhile, if you don't have the elite fighters fighting and you're scrambling around for other stuff, you know, it's okay, it's fine. It's like going to a club fight in the old days, when they would have club fights in some towns every night of the week.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully by the fall or the winter or maybe next spring, fighters will be tired of sitting on their butts and get out there and perform.
They're getting old. And there was a bit of a, I don't know if you saw the Showtime card last night. I guess you didn't, but you want to talk about a heist. I mean, this Ricky Romero walked away with the WBA 135-pound interim crown with a decision of 7-5 in rounds, 8-4 in rounds, and 10-2 in rounds. And I thought he might have lost 10-2 in rounds. In fact, the WBA issued a letter this morning saying, we're going to order an immediate rematch. So if they said that within 24 hours, you know it really stunk bad.
Well, that shows we are back into the boxing scene.
Is Deontay Wilder, is he in a position of strength? I mean, he's got this third fight contracted with Tyson Fury, or he can let Tyson Fury go and fight Anthony Joshua and take some step-aside money. Is there any movement in this heavyweight division, or are they all still waiting on what's going on with the virus?
As far as I know, nothing is going on. Big fights make most of their money on pay TV,
mm-hmm.
but in the really big events, the gate is important. You're adding millions and millions of dollars. So I don't quite understand it all. I know I watched the golf tournament last week,
mm-hmm.
when this kid from Berkeley, Japanese American, won the PGA championship, and read the next day how the television numbers were the highest in decades or something. So the fact that a lot of people are just sitting home like I am and watching that stuff, maybe that will be attractive, and maybe that's some of the future we're seeing somehow.
Okay, before I let you go, but you're not just sitting home. You're getting out and going shopping, and you're going to the store, and you're making your walks each day, all that kind of good stuff, right?
You bet.
Yeah, I know. I want you to stay out.
I don't go shopping every day, twice a week.
I gotta keep you in shape, Godfather, doing that road work.
Well, I'm trying, Pedro, and I hope you are as well.
I am, and of course I'm trying to do my little 2 miles here and there. Kiss the God Mama for me. We'll talk next week, sir. I thank you once again for your precious time.
Thank you, Pedro.
The great Larry Merchant, HBO retired godfather, exclusively on Ring Talk Live Worldwide, baby.
Get up, get on up, stay on the scene. Get on up, like a sex machine. Get on up, get up, get on up, stay on the scene. Get on up, like a sex machine. Get on up. Wait a minute, shake your arm, then use your palm. Stay on the scene, like a sex machine.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
He's doing one more tour. This is Peter Frampton. He's doing like one last tour if they ever tour again. So if you get a chance to see his tour when they start touring again, go see Peter Frampton. He was absolutely a show stealer when I went and saw him a couple of years ago. I mean, he's like blew Steve Miller off the stage. Checking out the upcoming boxing schedule. Of course, Fox is going to be having some fights. Check out their schedule. And, of course, ESPN Plus and the Zone straight back into boxing, of course. Now, boxing, per se, is not going to roll, I don't think, big time. I don't think we're going to have major, major fights unless fighters want to take less, unless the promoters want to take less. I mean, somebody told me that Vince McMahon's going to start throwing wrestling matches at empty arenas. In other words, he's going to rent an entire arena and have it be empty just to have the feeling of his World Wrestling Entertainment events being in an arena, per se, and not in the studio. So good luck with that. The 21st, Telemundo comes back. Baby Iguara is going to take on Axel Aragon. That's a light flyweight bout going in 108 pounds. August 22nd, The Zone's coming back, of course, with Dillian White and Alexander Povetkin. What do these guys have in common? Flintstone vitamins. They both tested positive for steroids. Stay tuned for hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into the world of boxing and MMA. And yes, Larry Merchant was right. Jackson Marinos of the Dominican Republic got robbed last night. Boxing's back, baby, but the wrong way. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Stay tuned for hour number two coming up on many of these same stations live, always on Sports Byline and Twitch.tv.